What's up, guys? This is the Toasty Podcast. My name's Sky.
And I'm Maddie B.
Today, we're going to hit something that might be a little depressing, but hey, whatever. I'm going back to my roots, and we're going into finance. We're going to talk about housing markets and inflation. So, let's get toasty.
Let's do it.
All right. Wowzers.
Yeah.
So the whole point of this episode actually came from a few of the Toasty fans, if you will. And by the way, guys, on this episode, I won't be able to comment, and I may not even be able to see your comments. I'm working on that. I use an app to switch between the screens and all that stuff because I don't have a guy doing production, which, by the way, if you know a guy, please tell me. Yeah. But in that regard, I can't comment back, so I apologize. I love you guys, and I can keep moving on. So yeah, housing market, dude, everyone wants to think that mortgage rates being lower is a beautiful thing. And it is. It's great. It's awesome.
Yeah.
But I think they don't understand the repercussions of these things.
Exactly, yeah.
It's just like, we're going to talk about inflation later. It's just the same thing. Like, you can't just keep...
The inflation is a result, partially.
It is a result, yeah. And so... You want to talk about why 2008 happened. Well, you can go watch The Big Short. But I wouldn't say you have to have this illegal thing happening for it to happen. Like, you don't have to have these mortgage-backed securities that are backed by bad bonds or bad loans or whatever, necessarily. You have people flooding to Texas, moving in, and thinking, yes, I want a house because I'm moving from California.
Yep.
And you're going to end up with the same thing as when they were moving to California, and we're going to end up in a housing market collapse or a correction, if you want to sound more economical about it.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I think it really just depends on the adjustment of prices. Yeah.
Right. And you can't, and like supply and demand, right? Yeah. So currently we're 3.8 million homes behind, according to Freddie Mac. 3.8 million homes behind what we need to be for Americans, right? We were 2.5 million, I think, in 2018.
What does that mean? Like they're
they
that
need
many
to produce
people
that
looking for homes.
Correct. Huh. See, so right now no one's building, right? Well, they're trying, but they can't because
it's very expensive. Yeah.
It's very expensive. Lumber and everything's gone up, right?
Yeah.
So, and builders are still believing in 2008. They actually are still worried about it, which I would be too. Why wouldn't you be? 12 years ago, why wouldn't
really
you be?
Changed,
nothing has changed, and they don't want to just freaking. You're pumping this. It's whatever. You're pumping the system. So that's not happening. So people are buying houses that are already built, right? Okay, well, supply and demand obviously works the way that if there's less homes and more people want to buy, the prices go up, right? Mm-hmm. But you have this absurdity happening. No one wants to rent for some reason. It's insane to me. Mm. I don't think, you know, obviously you grow up and you think, okay, I need to buy a house because that's what I was told, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a time and place for that. There's also a time and place for renting.
Yeah.
And so right now, if you're about to buy a house in Texas and people are over... like shooting the offers like crazy.
Yeah.
It's insane.
I mean, I just did in my house.
Then
not
compare,
like, not like crazy, but like.
I'm talking $50,000 plus. I've heard numerous times.
What,
it's insane.
On what price?
On like, so yeah, on a house. So like one was like 285. The guy's like, okay, I'm going to give you 340. I'm like, what?
That's
okay,
a lot.
This is happening in Dallas specifically, right?
Okay.
So I'm thinking, why? You know, why do you want a house that
the
bad?
Seller's market for sure.
And
do there's people desperate to get here just to save that much money. And the thing is, if they're coming from California where you know, $250,000 house is like, you know, I don't know, 1,100 square feet, something small, you know,
mm-hmm.
two bedroom, one bath in a crummy neighborhood, and it's going to be $250,000, $300,000 in California. What that can get you here is pretty awesome. So
hey, that's another thing. You're dealing with people moving from California,
they're like,
and
they have tons of money,
right?
I only have $500,000 to spend on my house, and I'm a middle income, you know,
right.
From California standards.
And so
yeah,
to them, it's like, well, I have the money from my last house. Why do I care if I overpay?
Exactly.
But that's like,
that's
not financially sound
that's
at
already
all.
Already, Californians ruining Texas because they're driving. They are driving up the price of housing.
We can rein that in, but yeah, I get it.
About,
I understand.
I don't know about like. That's the thing is that value going to maintain though? Is it just going to stay up?
Well, see, that's what people are asking, right? They're asking, how does it correct? What happens when it corrects then?
Does it, or does it just stay stagnant for
So it was flat. So the curve, if you will, was flat in 2018, right? Before the pandemic really hit, you know?
Right.
And that's what the people were like thinking about. Like, why was it flat? It was flat because everyone was behind and no one was like trying to buy houses that badly. Yeah. The pandemic actually made people want to move out of the city more than ever.
Hmm.
Right? Imagine that. Why would they? Well, because, you know, pandemic hit harder in the cities or whatever, and they're tired of it.
Yeah, plus lockdowns were more extreme in the cities than they were in.
Right, like New York specifically, it was like a 56% decrease in buying in the city and a 44% increase in suburbs.
Because there's no tourism.
That also affects
tourism,
it.
Tourism is huge.
Right,
that's
huge.
And plus they shut all the restaurants down, and that's like 15-20% of all the businesses in New York City are probably restaurants.
Right, right.
So
all I'm saying is there's a lot of hype surrounding the overvalued housing market right now. And normally what that means is, you know, you have a correction at some point. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say, I know it's going to happen now or it's going to happen in a year. I'm not an economist. That's not who I am. That's not what I do. But
it's already happening.
We have it when there's somewhat something going on here, right?
Yeah. And the thing is, a lot of people like to say, oh, look at the price of lumber. Look at the price of lumber. It's gone up like well over 100%. I'm going to say it's like
well over. It's like 250% or something like that, right?
I don't think it's that high. But it's the average price. But it's way higher. But in my opinion, that's more because of the renegotiation of NAFTA or the U.S. Was it USMCA? Yeah. U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement.
Oh, right.
The
yes.
Trump trade deal right. with North America. Yes. Because we started buying a lot less Canadian lumber. And if you look at all the lumber in Home Depot or Lowe's, you'll see that it comes from like the Pacific Northwest, like Idaho or Washington or something like that, Oregon. And of course, they're going to charge a lot more because those states have a lot more strict lumber regulations. So that's a big reason of why the price of lumber has gone up.
Right. Well, yeah, and you have, right, correct. But I don't
just inflation or demand. It is demand for sure. Like that is a part of it. A lot more, like you said, a lot more people are looking to buy homes. But that's not the only factor really.
Of course not.
So, but anyway, that's another reason like building homes is getting more and more expensive. So
right, unless you just try to build it yourself somehow, you know,
cinder blocks. There you go. There's your answer. Concrete.
Let's do it, man. Let's lay it down. So the median home price in 2021 March, so last month, was $370,000. That's a historical high. It's higher than it's ever been. So, you know,
makes me wonder what it was in like 2001.
2001. Oh, that's 20, interesting. 20 years ago. I would think like, well, yeah, right, 20 years ago. I would think like 2006 or 7 or some, like not 6 or 5 maybe. I don't know. But right before we hit that, you know, that point.
Uh-huh.
But I'll say this. According to, so I use a place called longtermtrends.net. I have for a while for stocks and everything else. It's a really good indicator. Basically, it takes data from St. Louis Federal Reserve and some other places, some Yale and some other places, and uses like the Case-Shiller model for median real estate essentially, and then also S&P 500 and all this other crap that I normally don't bring up on the show, and basically gives you overall charts like the U.S. debt to GDP ratio type thing in a chart, right? Well, all of these are historically high. Almost every single chart that I look at is like we are kind of in a housing bubble, right? So like, hold on, let me go to one of these charts. Home price and income ratio. Well, honestly, this says we were in, okay. So we're not quite to the 2008 levels yet. So that's good to know. As far as I'm looking right now, we're at 6.3 and 2008 was 6.8.
Oh, okay.
So we're pretty close.
Yeah.
But on this chart, it makes it seem like, oh, that's nothing, but it's significant. We're still higher than we have been. As far as home price to median income, that's what I'm looking at right now. That's the ratio I'm looking at, right?
Exactly.
Home price to median income. Yeah. And we're just getting worse and worse as far as that goes.
That's the thing is wages are not keeping up with the rate of inflation.
Have you seen all these memes? Like unemployment memes, basically?
Uh-uh.
These guys in a line for unemployment, and then on the right side is, you know, $11 an hour job, no benefits, whatever, and it's empty. And they're like, hey, we're hiring. Everyone's hiring, you know?
Yeah.
Because that's the two sides of the story right now.
Exactly.
Well, everyone's hiring. Right. Why don't you have a freaking job? And then the guys on unemployment are like, why would I get a job? That's dumb.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, financially dumb. But, like, I'm thinking, damn, how do we do that? How do we fix that, you know?
Stop giving out so much in unemployment.
Stop giving out so much in unemployment. Yeah. Kind of match the prices with wages. I don't know.
Stop throwing a bunch of printed money at the economy, because that's just going to drive up everything.
Everything. Not just the housing market. Yes. Everything.
Yes.
So that leads us to inflation, I guess, a little bit. I think housing market, like I said, is headed towards a correction. And I think that if you're trying to buy a home right now, I would not. It's a seller's market completely. You can actually go and look at like rented homes in the area you're looking, because there's always a rental house somewhere around there, like pretty close. Mm-hmm. Look at what it's renting for and make it a yearly, like, you know, sum. And then do the same thing with your mortgage that you'd be paying. If that rent is less than your mortgage, it's pretty clear that home would be overvalued for the area.
Yeah.
So you can actually rent out. See, and that's, I think everyone is, they're just so against renting. Like, they're so against it, you know?
Well, I mean, it is just throwing money
away. It is just throwing money away, but also you don't have home repairs or any of that. You're talking about like 4% of the income going to home repairs.
Well, that's what, I mean, the thing is, I have a home warranty. I paid like under $600, full year warranty. I've already used it twice on two almost pretty significant repairs. Just recently, my AC blower fan shorted and just went out.
Right.
The blower unit. So $75, basically a deductible. Came out, replaced it. AC's back same day. So.
Get a home warranty. Dang.
Yeah, I was
going to
get a home warranty because
wowzers.
The motor itself was probably, I don't even know, $200-$300, I would imagine.
Yeah.
So.
And then the only other thing I could think of is like, you know, actual tasks at a house, but
yeah, well, yeah, okay, yeah,
but that's not. I mean, it's not a big deal, but I'm just, yeah. These are all things against it in a way, but then also like, if you really need a house, you need a house.
Yeah.
But honestly, there's still a case to be made for you might rent a house instead of buying a house right now.
Well, the thing is, we also want to rent out our house eventually,
right?
And buy another house,
right?
So. If we could do a cash out refi, use the cash we get out for a down payment on a new house,
mm-hmm.
and then rent the house we have out currently.
Then you're set. You're good.
Yeah.
So, and then the other thing is like, yeah, no one thinks about that, right? They think about the 15 years or the 30 years or whatever they're going to have a house. Uh-huh. But
Or they leapfrog from house to house.
Who has a house? I mean, maybe a long time ago. Maybe a boomer might have a house 15 years.
Yeah. Well, it depends.
What does that have? Does that
happen? If you get
now,
lucky,
you know?
and you know, you got this from a friend's aunt or something that passed away, and the friend doesn't want the house, so you got like a crazy deal on it. It's an amazing location. You may have that house for 30 years, you know.
Okay.
Because it's
right.
such a good steal.
No,
some,
right.
some people
right.
would keep their house for a long time if it was like a prime location. But a lot of people, like I was saying, like leapfrog. They basically pay a bunch of equity into their house, take that equity out when they sell the mm-hmm. house, and then put it down in a new house, and then.
The issue will come
from there.
The issue will come that
instead of keeping the houses,
if a correction happens, that equity can be lost as well. That's the problem.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
So you could be dealing with a person. Let's just say they're spending $280,000 or some. Okay, you know what? I won't even say that. We're in Texas.
Let's just say
$200,000.
Yeah.
And at a house that's like a normal average house, mm-hmm. right? A first time house, most likely, and they're just now buying it,
mm-hmm.
and it's $200,000. And we're in an overvalued market. So let's say we hit the correction, and now it's worth $150,000. And it's in not a very good – it's in an average location. So you're at a huge loss at that point. Because if you put – you could put all – you could make it amazing, remodel it, do everything you want,
mm-hmm.
put money into it. And the location might still hit you later.
Yeah.
And the averageness of the house might hit you later. All this stuff is normal. All this stuff, we always talk about this stuff. This is all housing. This is all normal stuff.
Exactly, and that's the thing. That's
it just gets magnified whenever it's an overvalued market, in my opinion. That's all.
It's the same for a lot of assets like that, like land or outside of real estate, like even cars.
Right.
I mean, if you kept a Corvette stock original for 50 years, you bought it for $5,000, $5,500 back in the 50s or whatever, and now it's worth $150,000, you know?
Right. The only thing I can see being
not what where you put, but if you bought, you know, some hunk of junk back then.
So if we compare like the housing market to stocks, right? The
yeah.
only benefit here is that housing market is not even close to as volatile, right? Mm-hmm. It just never is, because it's simply, in like simple terms, a house is physical, a stock really isn't, and so the way it works is like your mind works differently that way. And you can always sell a physical asset probably easier than you can make money on the stocks. Real estate, that's how real estate works. That's why it's so amazing. So if we had a correction, that the other benefit people might have is if we have a correction, it should take a while. I say should. you know, because 2007 and 8 was a bank thing and it ruined a lot fast.
And that's the thing, is as long as you don't panic, like that's, if you don't sell and panic, and like in 2008, a lot of people sold a lot of their stocks. Oh, I lost all this money because I panicked and sold.
Yeah, that's
same with the house.
Well, same with COVID, right?
Yeah, right.
I actually heard a couple people that like sold then. I'm like, why are you doing this?
That's great. I bought a bunch of stocks then.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I'm jumping on that. Yeah, if you just like hold, you know, the house for another 10 years after the collapse, it's going to be worth what it was then, and you'll recover eventually.
Eventually.
That's the thing,
but it takes longer in the housing market than it does with stocks for sure.
Right.
You're talking about a year turnaround for stocks, kind of, and maybe 2 years. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about, 5 to 10 years on the house. Like that's,
depending on the region.
That's a lot, you know, and I get it. But then again, you're going to be in a position where you're like, well, crap, I need money. And I'm paying $1,600 a month on this house that's worth $200,000, you know?
The cool thing about Texas is it is relatively insulated from the rest of U.S. politics, relatively.
Right.
It's not like New York or California where they're like, right, oh, crap, interest rates are still low and prices are going to go up. Like, yeah, things are already really expensive.
And that leads me into asking what the boundaries. Politics... Asking, I guess, kind of, but I want to talk about how politics actually affect everything, but specifically the housing market, right? Because you're talking about like California politics and New York politics and how they're doomed anyway because of the way they are. And I wonder what policies would need to be in place just to like help the situation, right? Not pumping money,
as New York and California go,
to keep it going the way it is, right?
Just less regulations. That's really what it comes down to. If you make the process simple, then it'll be less. The process itself will be less expensive, as far as buying a house or buying a car or whatever. And then keep the taxes low. That's going to incentivize investment and incentivize the purchase of a house or a car or whatever.
And we're right in the middle of election in Fort Worth right now for
new mayor,
for property taxes May 1st.
Uh-huh.
They're probably going to decrease, which is great, I guess.
Yeah.
The problem comes in the structure. That's something else I want to talk about, even though it has nothing to do with how it just, sorry, this is like important, honestly.
Sure. Yeah.
Property taxes, right? Whatever.
Yeah.
I'm going to have a guest on the show and he's going to tell us all about it later. But tonight I just kind of want to preface, but he's in this election, or he's in the middle of it, because he has to be a part of it. And he's basically saying, yeah, taxes are lower, but the structure is still the same. So the school is getting, you know, this huge bulk of this property tax that's getting lower, and emergency services and all this other stuff is getting way less.
Hmm.
So you're talking about like 173 specifically for Parker County, $173, I think it was, per year is what goes to emergency services.
$173?
I think that's actually Springtown specifically, not Parker County. Yeah.
Okay.
$2,000 goes to the school.
Wow.
And they want more.
Huh.
Isn't that weird?
That's weird. And how often is that per?
I think it's just per year. I'm not sure though. When do you pay property taxes?
Yeah, once a year.
Exactly. So I think it's just per year.
For me, it's built into my.
Well, property taxes, that's where it is, right? Property taxes are for all this stuff, like civil, emergency services, and education. And I think it's like 62% or some crap is education. Which no one wants to vote on something, not even just property taxes, but why can't we vote on something that's the structure bill? Like, let's vote on something that changes the structure of something, not less or more or another bill.
Because that's why we elect Congress people. Right?
They do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or the county clerk or whoever. School board.
Right.
But yeah, That's their job, is to create the policies. And we vote on like the big things, the big referendums.
Right. You know?
If it's if they put it up to a referendum, like they're like, oh, let's pass the buck to the people and then they can decide, and then no politician has blood on their hands.
That's right.
Basically what it's for. But really it's just a form of direct democracy.
So. Nice. Well, we'll get into that more later. It just had to do with housing, so I brought it up. I'm gonna have him on the show.
Yeah,
we'll talk about it.
That'll be cool.
It'll be a good one. But we can move on, because like you said, inflation is kind of like an effect or maybe a cause of this whole thing.
Yeah.
But I kind of want to know. So the history of the housing market, there's only been, I think, like two bubbles. I think it was like 1946, maybe? No?
I have no 1970, idea when maybe? The first housing bubble was.
Dang it, dude.
It probably would have been in the
46 was like literally World War II, and that's why I was thinking like, oh, this is it, but no. Huh. Anyway, dude, the other one was obviously 2008. That's the most recent one that I'm comparing to.
Let's just
to.
Stick with the ones.
But the history of inflation, that's what we need to get into.
Inflation. So basically when you inflate them, what's going on now is the monetary supply is being inflated. Like they're increasing the amount of money in the economy. And usually if the government does that by a little bit here and there, that's basically what the Fed has been doing for the last 100 years.
Since like the gold standard is gone.
For the last 100 years since they've been in. The gold standard has been gone since the Nixon administration. We officially went off the gold standard in 72, I think, something like that. But up until that time, you could go into a bank and be like, here, I want a dollar worth of silver, and then they would hand you, you know, an ounce of silver or whatever it was back then. But not today. Now it's just fiat currency. So what they can do then, since they've made it a fiat currency, there's nothing other than the word of the federal government backing the dollar. They can increase the amount of dollars out into the economy, increasing monetary supply, which in turn decreases purchasing power. Because there's more supply. There's just an inverse relationship. And that's just macroeconomics 101. And doing that, along with keeping interest rates low, the Federal Reserve, they just put out a press release yesterday, April 28th at 2 p.m. So right before...
Biden's speech.
Yeah, right before President Biden has this like big speech in front of like a third of Congress or something like that. They put out this statement, and let's see.
I feel like, they choose those, you know, opportune times, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. There's a reason they chose that timing, for sure. I was trying to find the exact percentage rate that they're holding the New York Federal Reserve to. Oh, here it is. Okay. So, Board of Governors, this is decisions regarding monetary policy implementation. The Federal Reserve has made the following decisions to implement monetary policy, blah, blah, blah. First bullet point is the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System voted unanimously to maintain the interest rate paid on required and excess reserve balances at 0.1% effective April 29th, 2021. So, there's free money, basically. Like banks cannot charge, if they're a federal bank, they cannot charge in excess of 0.25%. So a lot more money is going to be flowing out there.
It's influx.
Less, the thing is, keeping interest rates low, the thought behind that is, that's going to drive investment, that's going to drive more purchases. But the thing is, they're also increasing monetary supply rapidly. They're doing stimulus payments for just direct cash payments to people, which is crazy to me. Even though I've been the recipient of two of those checks,
right?
At least two or three, something like that.
I can't even remember.
Keep track. It's just a huge mess. Like,
you just keep popping out money, dude.
It's sad.
So dumb. It's dumb. It's honestly dumb.
Yeah, exactly. That plus, you know, people moving from a state with high inflation to a state with low cost of living, like Texas, like California to Texas, they're artificially driving up.
That also drives up the housing market and everything else. Right.
Plus the demand of lumber because everyone wants to build their own house.
Right.
Today.
And to them, to the government, it's like, oh, this is good for economy in a way, right?
Yeah.
But
and the price of barrels of oil have all gone up, so we're getting all sorts of different increases, and oil has been really, really low almost since 2008.
Yeah,
it almost hit like $30-something a barrel.
Well, and then if you watched our last episode, we had a guest on and we talked about life insurance and stuff like that. You can't imagine how that would have to do with what we're talking about right now. But I feel like some paths are going to cross here, and we talked about how the tax rate is going to go up.
Yep,
it's going to go up, and just because of their long-term plan, you know, a long time ago with your grandmothers and grandfathers, they were like, lower tax rates than we can actually have them, or actually higher tax rates so we can have them influx for 401ks and social securities and everything else. And so everything else gets lower, all the tax rates get lower. And at the end of the day, right now, technically I'd say this is the end of the day that I'm talking about, we hit a rock bottom and there's no more money to be had and social security is ruined. It has to be jacked back up because they have to get money somehow. Because they were allowed to use that social security and those 401ks that were in companies for themselves. That was allowed. And I didn't know that until this last episode, because the banks aren't allowed to do that with your money, but the government apparently is. And so that is what was happening. And now here we go. We're at a crossroads. I feel like at some point these two paths are going to meet. This high inflation rate is going to hit.
Exactly.
And this high tax rate is going to hit.
I think in a maximum.
And we're just going to have this freaking collision of
in a maximum something. Of 3 to 4 years, you're going to see catastrophic price increases. Like there's nothing they can do now. They've already spent, I think they've already spent like $6 billion this year alone, or $6 trillion this year alone. And the deficit for 2020 was like $4 trillion. And they're not, their revenue is like maybe $2 trillion. So,
is Texas still spending
$6 to $7 trillion, and they're only getting in two trillion, something like that, from, and all they're going to do is they're going to raise taxes on people making over 400. It's going to be households making over 400,000 a year, and it's going to
be people.
No. They say, oh, if you're...
Right. We talked about that. Yeah. House. It's definitely households. It's like two people making $400,000 together. Yep. Yep. Which, in America, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, that's not much higher. That's upper middle income for sure. Right.
Is Texas still the like one of the only states? Does it still have no deficit? Are we still running at no deficit?
It is a violation of the Texas Constitution to run a deficit.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that part. We talked about it before. Like, it doesn't run at a deficit, but yep. I didn't know it was a freaking violation. That's legit. Yep. So that's why we can't. Like, there's no way.
Nope.
That's what they need to do in the first place, dude.
Yeah, there should be it. Well, there was amendments proposed several times to
federal.
Yeah, outlaw a federal deficit.
Wow.
Yeah, that would have been awesome.
But now we're like,
you gotta
what
pay
do you do
for
now,
what,
you know?
You gotta own up, you know? If you're in Congress, you gotta say, all right, you want that free Medicaid or, you know, free healthcare, then you gotta pay for it. It's gonna be a huge tax increase right now. For everybody. But guess what? You're not going to have to pay for your doctor anymore. Do y'all want that or not? And then people will decide, yes or no. That's how it's supposed to work. I mean, constitutionally, there's no right to health care, and that's not a responsibility of the government, and it shouldn't be. But I'm just saying that's an example of how it's supposed to be.
Right.
But instead, you got to pass it to see what's in it, you know?
Yeah.
That's the way it works now.
Yeah.
Because it's so giant and convoluted. So right. Just real quick, price of oil... In January. Wait, what is this? Yeah, light crude oil in January was below $20. No. A year ago, it was below $20. Okay.
Okay.
Now it is worth.
But didn't last year we had
that 64.
Right. Last year we had that big deal where there was like tons of offshore barrels that needed to be bought.
Yeah.
They were overproduced.
That's what I'm saying. That was rock bottom.
Right.
And now it's skyrocketing back up. Almost $70 a barrel now. And it was long, you know, a few years ago, it was almost over $100 a barrel. I remember it was getting real expensive. Gas was like $4 a gallon.
Yeah,
it's going back up, and that's another big reason that a lot of people are like, oh, Biden and his inflation
but it's not.
Is crazy. No, it's because of the price of oil is going back up.
Boom. It has, and that's what I see. And I don't want to argue necessarily because, like, yeah, I'm against some of his policies too.
Yeah,
but it doesn't actually.
You got to be honest because it doesn't serve your best interest not to be honest.
Yeah, and it's not him. Like, what do you want to say?
Then the left and your opponents are going to say, "Oh, well, here's a gotcha."
He literally got into office and then the price of oil was going up, and they're like, "That's it." I'm like,
yeah,
what?
It was already
guys,
going up.
It was already.
But,
yeah, correct.
There are other reasons. Price of gasoline has gone up. I think they plan on increasing the gas tax as well. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, he is increasing a lot of taxes. So that is one thing I can say is actually his administration. But anyway.
Ugh. So the Fed is going to undertake, this is more from that press release, they're going to undertake open market operations as necessary to maintain the federal funds rate in a target range of 0 to 0.25%, increase the system open market account holdings of the Treasury securities by $80 billion a month, and of agency mortgage-backed securities by $40 billion a month. So just pumping money into
mortgage-backed securities.
Yeah.
And that's, does that sound familiar to you?
Yeah, exactly.
Big Short. All right, cool. Wow.
So there's, like I said, they're just pumping more and more money into it. So the Fed was created in, I believe it was 1912, under Woodrow Wilson. And since then, they've had their hand in all of America's money supply and money demand, as opposed to just the, basically just the value of gold. That's what it was before.
Right.
So
once that was out of the door,
yeah,
they just got it, and there's everything. It was
and
like, here we go.
Absolutely, money supply only increased. It only increased.
We're in a game of Monopoly, dude.
Yeah. So,
money.
Just some fun facts here real quick. The Model T, Ford Model T, at the beginning of 1908, there were fewer than 200,000 on the road, and it was fairly expensive.
Fewer than how many? Wait, what was that?
Fewer than 200,000 on
the road. Fewer than 200,000,
yeah.
Okay.
And then I want to say by like the mid, early 20s, the assembly line, they were doing like 1 million a year or something like that. Yeah, they were churning out cars for sure. Let's see. It was $825 in 1908. That'd be about $18,000 today, according to history.com. And a Ford Escape S, basic car, little compact SUV, about what a Model T would be.
Mm-hmm.
The base model is $24,885. So that just kind of gives you a basic idea of how far cars have come.
What about like 6,000 over what supposedly the inflation? But you're also, I mean, okay, you're also adding like features and stuff like that too. But I get it.
Yeah,
I understand.
Safety. There's a lot more going
into
it for sure.
Yeah, safety and AC and
yeah,
you know, honestly, the mileage is probably worse because Model T's had like, because they didn't have anything on them, right? It was like this great thing that could run and it was fine. That's one thing I've heard about is that older cars actually had better mileage. Like really old, I'm talking about the first cars, better gas mileage because there was nothing else going on. There was nothing else on them. There was no accessories.
There was like,
it was just the engine.
I don't even think there was like one pulley.
Right. People don't understand that.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. They didn't even have alternators.
But it also only went like what, 20 miles an hour or 30 miles an hour or whatever it was. 40? What was
probably
it?
Probably about 45.
40. Yeah, okay. I thought 44 for some reason ringing in my head, but I don't actually know.
So here's something else interesting. From dummies.com, okay.
We use only the best sources, so.
So the median household income in 1967 was $7,000, $7,143. Yeah. Today, roughly the median household income of America is about $55,000. The median household income for Norway is about $65,000. The median household income for South America, I think, is around $11,000 to $15,000 for the entire continent of South America.
Wow.
Yeah,
wowzers,
just, to put things, and then if you go Africa, it's probably below $10,000.
So you're talking about $55,000, and you're gonna buy a $24,000 car. That's like, you know, almost half of your income. $825 versus $7,000.
That's why people are financing cars for 8 years.
Right. But you didn't have to finance a Model T for 8 years.
No, you didn't finance anything back then.
It didn't exist.
I was going to say, there was no finance. I don't even think they had financing for houses back then, did they? They had mortgages in 1908.
They might have done the whole, like a handshake agreement, like seller's financing. They might have come up with that, you know, lawyers been like, I want to write this up, but that's all I can think of.
Yeah, so that could have been happening. And the minimum wage was $1.40 an hour. In the same year, average American home cost was $24,000, and a Beetle was, a Volkswagen Bug, was about $1,500.
Damn, dude. And you're
1967.
So, and how long has the minimum wage been? It's like $7.55 right now, right?
$7.25.
How long has it been that? Do you know?
Oh, man. Since like...
Because I was in high school when it was $7.25.
Yeah. I was going to say since like the late 90s or early 2000s. Long time. Maybe no. Maybe not that long. Maybe...
Really? Holy crap.
Look it up. Look it up on your...
Holy crap.
So, a dollar could get you 3 gallons of gas. In the 60s. This one is completely irrelevant today, but 21st class postage stamps. Don't really care about that. It could get you a hamburger with fries, salad, and dessert.
Fries, salad, and dessert.
A gallon of milk and other groceries.
Since 2009, it has been $7.25 per hour.
2009?
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
What was it before that? Like $6.75 or $6.50 or something like that?
I'm not sure, man. The effective nationwide minimum wage is $11.80 as of May 2019. What? Where is this coming from?
Because the different states have different minimum wages.
It doesn't say median. It just says effective nationwide minimum wage. That's weird. Anyway,
I don't know. That's weird. Wyoming's minimum wage is like $5 or something like that.
Really?
Yeah. Just cause
everyone's a freaking rancher, dude.
Yeah,
they're like,
well, federal minimum wage is $7.25, so you got to pay that if you pay federal
tax. See, that's what's weird. The federal minimum wage is $7.25, and then this is Wikipedia. Okay, guys, I get it, I understand, but like, the effective nationwide minimum wage is $11.80. That's not true.
I mean, a 6-pack of Pepsi was 59 cents, bro.
Nice, dude.
Jeez.
Take me back, man. I definitely was alive then. Yes. Heck yeah.
Yeah, there's no good news on this podcast, for sure.
I said it'd be depressing, and it's depressing. Yeah. The fact is, I might say to prepare, right?
Buy some Bitcoin.
There's on long-term...
It's more stable than the dollar.
If you guys want to go check out longtermtrends.net, do it now if you want to. I don't care. There's actually a Bitcoin versus... like stocks charts, and there's Bitcoin versus US dollar charts, things like that, right?
Yeah.
They can keep track of. And it's actually cool.
What I think would be a good idea for investors to look at is emerging markets in foreign countries.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the value of the dollar is going to decrease, that's going to be their opportunity to
make things happen for themselves.
Exactly.
And that's where I'm afraid.
Africa.
Well, yeah, I'm afraid of our boys at China, over at China. Damn.
Them boys over in China.
But I am excited. I don't know about excited. I'm not excited about it, but it's good. It's good to look at.
I'm anxious.
Yeah, Africa and all other stuff. Other than China.
I was going to say, the big thing I think Americans should do is focus on Africa and South America, our own hemisphere, because if we focus on those two emerging markets specifically,
as far as investing
and as far as gaining political influence, which we've already done in South America. If you look at a lot of South American constitutions, their constitution is based off of our constitution. The Declaration of Independence is, if they have one against Spain or France or whoever, Portugal and Brazil's case, then it mirrors a lot of what our Declaration of Independence said. It's pretty interesting. But I think if we can exert a lot more political influence over them and a lot more economic partnership with them, I think that not only would be good for our country, it'd be good for our citizens, because we'd be able to trade with them. And I feel like the value of the dollar would, if it does decrease, then
it'd be helped by that.
It would be helped. It would be helpful to them.
It would be helpful to them extremely, but it'd also in the long run be helpful for us, because we're bringing them up, and that might help us bring our value up as well.
Yeah. Same with like Central America, the Shatterbelt region, like
And this is Panama, why Nicaragua, foreign policy is very, very, very important.
Yeah, you got to look at that.
Always very important.
But I think if you invested in their pesos today, 5 years from now, that could be a very fruitful investment for you. So if you're into Forex, do that.
We've had an episode about that as well, if you want to get into that. My boy Jordan came on and talked about that. This is like, how long ago was that? A year ago? I don't know. We had an episode. Go to YouTube. Go to wherever else we're at. Spotify, all of the above. Check that out. If you guys noticed, I'm drinking a cloudy, watery drink. It is Liquid IV, and it is amazing, and you should get some.
How is that?
It's amazeballs. It's awesome, dude. It's great.
Really?
So if you're the guy like me and you don't drink water, like, I just don't drink enough water, dude. There's not enough time in the day to drink that much water. Even when I work out, I'm like, man, had pre-workout, had whatever, had amino acids. No water. So yeah. I get Liquid IV, and it's like 3 times the amount of water.
Hydration.
You know, honestly, dude, I'm sure it's like salt, you know?
Yeah.
Like mostly. I was trying to say mainly and mostly at the same time. Anyway, mainly salt, but it's freaking good, and it doesn't taste like Gatorade. Gatorade is too sweet, way too sweet, way too much sugar in it. Liquid IV is available on Amazon. And I'll have a link in the description because it's one of my affiliates.
Cool.
All right, that was it. That was the ad.
So here's some more bad news. U.S. inflation hits 2.5 year more high. More
bad news.
This is a depressing podcast. If you're in a good mood today,
oh man, I still love it, dude. I have a great time, but it's because we're having fun.
Yeah. U.S. This is from inflationcalculator.com. U.S. inflation hits 2.5 year high. Consumer prices in March. So a couple months ago, in March log, biggest gain in 8.5 years. U.S. inflation over the past year registered at more than 2.5 year high. So a big reason for that is the price of oil. Energy went up by 13.2% year over year. Core inflation, all items other than food and energy, was only 1.6%, which is actually pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Food was 3.5%.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
I mean, in a way, you can
inflation,
say...
Inflation, all items, was 2.6%.
Right. Anyway, I mean, then the housing market thing, the whole pricing thing was like... I think it was like 19%. Let me go back to this little guy, this little article right here.
Oof.
19% over last year, yeah, for the week ending April 10th. That's crazy. Just short answer, you know, the recap, we're headed for something. I can't really say exactly what would cause it, you know, catalyst, you know? Like 2008, right, the catalyst was banks.
Yeah.
Which you'd think that would also be the catalyst now because it's money, but I'm not really positive there. There's actually a book. Ray Dalio is a big economist, right? And I've read a few of his books, a couple of his books, because I'm not a big reader. But one of them is called Principles for Navigating Big Debt Crisis, and it is the study on the way of thinking to prepare for an economic collapse or economic crisis. Since we all know it has to happen at some point, well, I don't know if it has to happen. That's another thing I want to talk about is how would you even ever fix this, you know? Does it just keep going up and down? Is that just how it has to be?
Yeah.
You know, it just has to be that way because of how things have to run. Capitalism. But
and some may argue that the fluctuations in the economy are due to the Fed, and some argue that the Fed is actually minimizing the fluctuations. But
either way,
I'm trying to think of a good analogy. It's like you're on an ocean and you're on a smaller vessel and you're really feeling those waves, right? The Fed is just like you with an oar. Like that's like basically all they're doing. You know, they might be able to steer the ship slightly one way or the other.
Right.
But it's not going to.
It's not going to. It's the end is inevitable.
You're still on the freaking middle of the ocean.
Right. The end is inevitable.
Exactly.
So for that, you read this book and he'll help you. He will help you manage and prevent your financial collapse personally.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's that. the person that got me into politics was basically Ron Paul, right?
Yeah.
Now, the person that got me into economics was Peter Schiff.
Yeah.
Peter Schiff is awesome.
Yeah, he
is. In my opinion. He is pretty spot on just about all of his predictions. A lot of people don't like what he has to say because
it's negative.
He's too real, yeah. In my opinion.
Yeah, no one has. That's so funny how people do that.
And a lot of people just want a little bit of optimism at the end of what's going on. He's like, nope. Basically, the Fed is just delaying the inevitable as long as they can.
Right.
Because as soon as they raise interest rates above a quarter of 1%, heaven forbid, then all hell's going to break loose. Everyone's going to stop investing. The stock market's going to collapse. Everyone's going to sell. The value of everything's going to go right back up. And that's the thing, is the Fed's just going to keep interest rates low and keep pumping money. And the president and the Congress have no problem with it, on the left or the right.
I guess everyone's just going to go put their money in Dogecoin then.
Doge it up. That would be my advice. Listen to Peter Schiff's podcast. It's pretty good. He was on Ben Shapiro's radio show other day. Yeah, they did an interview. Pretty good. It was probably one of the most productive and insightful interviews I've ever seen. And it was less than 10 minutes. They just both talk really fast and they're both really smart. So it was just it was awesome.
Pretty good. Not us, brother, but hey, whatever.
No, yeah, exactly. But they're good influences as far as that goes.
Heck yeah. That's the plan.
Real quick, I was born in 1991.
Oh, dang, really?
The dollar. So if you had a dollar in 1991, it'd be worth about $1.94 today. Due to inflation, it's 94.5% in my lifetime. So, what year were you born?
94, man.
78% in your lifetime. Yeah.
I would never invest in the dollar, but yes, I'm there.
Let's see.
For those of you keeping money under your mattress, you need to stop doing that.
Yeah, no, don't. Don't keep cash. Cash is...
not king.
Cash is becoming more and more worthless every day. So
yes, it is.
It's a depreciating
asset. It's a depreciating asset. Literally, it is.
That was a really nerdy joke. But it's true. So
this whole podcast was supposed to be that. So we're
since
good.
My parents were born in 59. Sorry, parents, to out you like that.
Aged.
The cumulative rate of inflation is 810.2%. Yeah, I looked up the Volkswagen thing. If you did buy that Volkswagen for $1,500 in 1967, it'd be worth $4,400 today. So it's just like you said, the things that are in cars, all the safety features and radios and air conditioning is all more valuable. So cars are more valuable. They've got more stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the thing, is they haven't become, I guess they have become less of a necessity for a lot of urban people that take public transportation. But for the vast majority of Americans that live in suburbs, cars are pretty necessary.
Well, specifically, if you live in Texas, you need a car.
Oh, yeah.
I would say, well, maybe not Austin, but even Dallas,
Houston has a metro and
oh yeah, they do. I've never used it, so I can't attest.
Me neither.
I don't know if it's, I used to live in close to Seattle, and their metro, honestly, dude, I didn't have a car for almost 2 years, right? And it was like, man, this is easy. That's the bus would take me literally. I lived probably a car ride was
DFW has
20 minutes or so.
You can take a bus to the train station, go from Dallas to Fort Worth, no problem. But
is
nobody
it easy?
Does that.
Is
it's
it easy?
Not, it's not efficient at all.
Right. And there was something forever. Literally there were bus stops everywhere, and you knew you were going to catch one. You could walk outside your apartment and there's a bus stop, and it was and everyone did it. See, that's the other thing. You're right about that, because if no one does it, then you get only weirdos on the bus, and who wants to be on the bus with weirdos?
Yeah.
No one.
Not me.
Right. And so... it's not a normal thing in Texas. They're like, you don't have a car? You loser,
Plus, a lot of stuff is really far away.
Well, Well, you're talking about Fort Worth to Dallas? That's crazy. But the train, some of my friends actually used to use that.
Yeah.
They would go from Fort Worth to Dallas on the train. And train was different, I guess.
My daily
commute is American Airlines Center.
30 miles or something crazy like that.
Yeah.
So
my daily commute. I don't have a commute, but I drive a lot, so I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah, I think we hit our things. Got our topics out of the way. It was a depressing one, but it was toasty, I guess,
I guess.
I'll read the comments later. I didn't get to see them.
We'll respond to them one by one.
You can't be promising stuff like that, dude. I'm just kidding. We will respond to them for sure. Thanks for watching, and I hope you guys joined us. I'll see who joined us, and
stay toasty.
Stay toasty. Toasty.